Hello and welcome to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
I'm Sebastian.
And we are excited for another show again this week because lots of things happened.
Okay.
All of the things keep happening. We had, in just the past week or so, we had Vancouver Pride.
Right.
That happened. We had some friends out in Vancouver, of course, and you could have seen CGSF, which is based out of Burnaby. Simon Fraser University had a those tent thingies.
Blue whale.
No, it's not a blue whale. Oh. Stall, like a stall, tent stall, like a table with two chairs and a tent, like a pavilion tent thing.
A booth.
A canopy. I'm forgetting the name. That's a booth. Yes, they had a booth.
Canopy's not bad.
I forget what the word is for that type of tent, though. I think it's a canopy tent.
A big top. It was a circus.
It wasn't a circus. No. I mean, it may have been a circus. It was Pride. Who knows?
I mean,
but all of our lovely friends over in CGSF were actually out at Pride. We are so happy to see such a strong delegation and such great, wonderful folks out there. And of course, I know that the folks over at CITR, which are out in Vancouver, were also there. So we want to do a shout out to them as well. Apparently, everybody had a good time.
That's good.
Everybody had a good time. Trudeau was there, okay. Meet and greeting, shaking babies, kissing hands.
And yet no PM has actually participated in an Ottawa Pride.
Except for Trudeau last year.
Did he? Was he there? Oh, he was there, but I couldn't
with
make
Kathleen
it.
Kathleen Wynne. Just because you weren't there when he was there.
Why?
Well, he wasn't really there unless you saw him.
Memories are short.
But no, he was at Vancouver Pride, which is interesting because the Liberals aren't doing so well in BC right now.
Oh,
with
yes.
The whole pipeline thing. So,
oh, yes.
Yeah, commentators have been like, some of the high fives were a little stiff there on the walkthrough, but there we go. You know who else was in Vancouver Pride who got themselves into... I mean, it was a bit of a... It was reported on. I think it's really a bit of a non-scandal.
Am I supposed to guess? Or...
Yeah.
Drake?
No.
Ashley McIsaac?
It's in a DC Marvel TV show that you like. That's not going to narrow it down. So the guy...
David Duchovny.
The guy that plays the Arrow was there.
Oh, right. Okay, yeah. You know, he's probably not allowed to drink water. The best way to get cut like that is to just dehydrate yourself. It's, I've read more than one article from, like, actors who've had to do naked scenes on, like, hero-themed shows. And they're like, yeah, no, you go in dry, you don't drink coffee, you don't drink water, you spend the day dry, you do your film scene, and then you pass out because you're seeing the stars. So, yeah. You know,
no, that's we don't recommend that.
Marvel Body is for comic books, not for real peoples.
Mm-hmm. So Stephen Amell is the guy who is the star of the Arrow franchise.
Right.
He went and he attended the Pride Parade and he's wearing a shirt that says, I'm not gay, but $20 is $20.
Okay.
And everyone's like, I mean, a lot of people there were like, oh, my God, it's Stephen Amell. I love Arrow. Your shirt is hilarious.
Yeah.
Here's $20. So lots of people posing with him with $20. And, you know, and it's that sort of tongue-in-cheek. But some of the criticism was like, you know, it's the idea of it being funny that you can be gay for low pay. That sort of it trivializes sexuality in a way. And anyway, people weren't super happy with it.
I mean, I think the fact that it trivializes it is part of why it's good, because it means that it's not as big a deal as it once was. That, like, I mean, I believe he identifies as straight. And if he's willing to wear that in public, then clearly the vision of what it means to be masculine has changed enough that this kind of thing just doesn't matter anymore. When I was a kid, you would have gotten beaten up for wearing that shirt, no matter how big and strong you are. So I mean, like, things have come a long way. I think it's fine.
Well, this sort of...
I can understand why they're offended, but yeah. I disagree is all.
And for me, I think I saw as well, I think Stephen Amell sort of demonstrated, it's not the first time he's been to Vancouver Pride,
mm-hmm.
and has sort of consistently demonstrated allyship.
Yeah.
This is, there was a tweet from a summer hater, Sonia.
Ryan
who
Reynolds
was saying that
has a
Stephen
similar.
Amell seems to be perpetually accidentally problematic, but it's just like, it's not mean spirit. Anyway, but this comes right off of the... the dovetails of Brighton Pride and a woman there who's complaining about the fact that there was a whole bunch of straight girls with t-shirts that said, "I'm straight, sorry," on the back. So as they walk around, it's literally signposting, "I'm straight, sorry."
Okay.
And it was the, what this girl took umbrage with is that it's sort of becoming almost like a music festival. Britney Spears was there. So it was like incredibly obnoxious that these girls have to like let everybody know in case, heaven forbid, they get hit on.
Well, I mean, okay, so it is a festival that is broadly organized for the entire community. Gay, straight, other, men, female, other, just everyone is welcome to go.
But it's the center, the heart of it is for the queer community.
Absolutely, but... And you're still going to get more queer people and allies than non-queer people and non-allies. Mm. But you're still going to attract, you know, fringes. And they will usually hang out on the fringes, luckily. But, I mean, this is what you get. I mean, you go to Caribana, you're going to see obnoxious non-Caribbean people there. But, you know, Caribana is a public event, so it's what you get. It's part of the turf. Like, I'm not saying... I mean, okay, so there's two different things. On the one hand... Like, what I'm trying to say is I'm not alarmed. I'm not justifying it. I'm not saying this is cool. What I'm saying is that this goes with the turf.
I think it was a stupid purchase.
Oh, yeah.
But what they don't realize is by saying "I'm straight, sorry," is a way of saying, like, "I am so worried about being hit on by other women that I must signpost this."
I mean, it's also very, very self-centered to assume. I mean, it's that old argument of, like, why the only straight men who are panicking about gay men hitting on them are the ones that no gay man would ever hit on. So there's a little bit of ego there. And Brighton, I mean, when I lived overseas, I spent most of my time around drunk women in their mid-20s. And I actually did go out on a night out when I was in York. And the hens there... everything you've seen on TV is I don't want to say it's completely accurate, but the Brits, they know a night out. So, I mean, I'm assuming that this was sort of a hen party of sorts.
Well, it's that the criticism is that it's becoming that sort of festival environment, and Britain's festival culture is very robust.
Yes. Yes.
And I think that there's a worry that what is a parade for solidarity, what was originally a riot. I don't know if that's distinct to Britain's history of pride parades, because of course the riot was Stonewall, is very American in its focus. It wasn't really just a music festival. It's never been just a music festival. You know, and I think it's important that we don't lose track of that, because Britney Spears also got into hot water at Brighton Pride. She was tweeting away about Brighton Pride, how amazing it is, and how great her fans are. And FYI, check out my latest perfume. And they're like, why are you profiteering off of what is supposed to be a symbolic day about self-expression and sexuality? Like, it's literally making dime off the back of, like, a riot for equal rights.
I'm in the exact same pool here, where I agree that this is despicable. But when you hire a shill, don't be alarmed when they shill.
Well, that was the point. They were like saying that, you know, musicians and artists do that. Every third tweet is a promo.
Yeah.
But what they're saying is, you know, is this going to start a conversation about whether or not musicians and artists need to take into mind the context of where they're shilling? You know what I mean?
It could also be, why did they even hire Britney Spears when the UK of all places in the world, I know, but the UK pumps out more gay icons than anywhere else in the world, I'm sure. Like, they could have gotten the Sugar Babes out there, and they're way more gay friendly. And they've been in the gay community for probably a couple years more.
Pretty sure Madonna's still out there.
Even when she was hot, I wasn't into her, though.
No.
Except for the Ray of Light album. I did like that, but otherwise I thought she was good but overrated.
So, I mean, it really begs the question of, are we being too sensitive? And I think, broadly speaking, yes, a little bit. I think we're overreacting. Yeah. But it's overreacting where there ought to be a reaction.
Yeah, like,
but maybe just dial down a couple of notches.
They're at an 8 and we need them at a 4.
Yeah.
Possibly a 3.
I mean, no reaction would be inappropriate.
Would be weird.
Yeah.
Would be weird, yeah.
Like, Stephen Amell's shirt was hilarious, but somebody probably should have explained to him that the whole
they could have just as easily gotten, like, and there's, being the UK as well, they have lots. They have plenty.
Referring to Brighton Pride. Yeah,
yeah. They have plenty of openly out artists as well. They could have gotten George Michael. They could have gotten Boy George. They could have gotten, I can't remember her name.
Boy George and the Culture Club have a new song out. We promoted it last week.
Exactly. So, like, here in Ottawa this year, Biff Naked's going to be playing, and she's been openly bisexual since she first, like, started making music in the mid-90s. You know, and people asked her about her sexuality in an interview on, like, Much Music, and she's like, "Are you kidding me? Look at me. Do I look straight?" And
there's not much left of the imagination with
Biff Naked. Yeah.
Well, we'll jump back to some of the other big stories across Canada just after this. We're actually going to play one of the new tracks by Biff Naked.
Oh,
Girl in a Hot Box.
That was an unintentional segue.
It was. I don't think you realized that I would just jump to that.
But it was a good segue.
But Hot Box Girls by Biff Naked. We will be seeing them in Ottawa, but seeing Biff Naked in Ottawa. But of course, be sure to check them out online and let us know. We, in the meantime, whilst you're listening to the song, do you think that what T-shirts wear and what's written on T-shirts should be policed? Are we overreacting? What are your thoughts on the conversation so far? Let us know at Talk Can Queer on Facebook and Twitter. And we'll be back just after this.
Superstars don't wait.
girl.
You too. Driver, driver. Step on it.
Oh, yeah. Hello and welcome back to Canqueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is still Luke Smith.
I am Sebastian.
Excellent. Now, we were talking just before the break about various prides. Of course, Pride season goes on right into September. We'll keep you abreast of any of the interesting Pride-related stories that we hear about.
And it renews very briefly in February.
Well, yeah, I just assume that's the next one over.
Well, February is like the university campus Pride Week, usually. Every university campus I've ever heard of that has their own Pride Week, it's usually in February. It's not always the same week, but it's usually in February.
Now, one of the ones coming up that actually I got a bit excited about that's kind of getting a bit of attention is Calgary Pride, which runs August the 18th to September the 2nd, or it might be the 3rd. Let me have a quick look. It is until September the 2nd. Mm. But what got me interested is the fact that their fundraiser, or one of the fundraisers, the Shakester and Strainbow...
Okay.
Get it? Because it's a cocktail reference. He's kind of picking up a bit of national attention for the innovative LGBT-themed cocktails that are coming out. So this has about 30 restaurants participating.
Now I'm going to have to just say right out that I'm always skeptical when it comes to new cocktails. Because there have been times where I come over to your place and like, here's a brand new cocktail. It's made with triple sec and vodka and it's got cranberry juice and you put a lemon in it. And it's called a Wilsbury Delight. And it's like, that's a Manhattan. Like, you just made... No, it's not a Manhattan. It's a Cosmo. Like, you just took an 80-year-old cocktail, gave it a new name, and put it in a different glass. Like, most new cocktails are just old cocktails with a new name. So, bear in mind that I also... One summer I was bored, so I got a college diploma in bartending. As you do. So, I mean, I'm very picky about this, but ignore my skepticism. Tell me the story. What's going on? Tell me about the innovation.
30-odd restaurants are participating,
right,
where a portion of one signature cocktail goes to donating to a non-profit that works with trans youth, the Skipping Stone Foundation.
Okay, yeah.
But what's quite neat about this one is that they've sort of challenged these restaurants and bars to create a signature-themed cocktail as well, which is pretty cool. So the bar manager, Franz Swinton, at the, I think it was the Raw Bar, has created...
Raw, R-A-W?
Yeah, the Raw Bar. The Raw Bar made one. It's got a bit of Sambuca, Martini Bitter, cold brew coffee, orange blossom syrup, and an egg yolk.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
Why the egg yolk?
I don't know. A lot of cocktails have egg yolk in them.
Probably a thickener of some kind.
Yeah, I don't know why they put egg in drinks.
Yeah.
It's bizarre.
Yeah, and it's cold brew coffee.
It's like...
That sounds interesting. That actually sounds like an Italian cake of some kind, like orange coffee and black licorice. Like, that could be... Yeah, yeah, I would give that a try. I'd pay for that. Make the proceeds go to charity. Or I'd make a cake with those flavors. Actually, I'll probably just make a cake with those flavors. I'm going to make a cake.
With those flavors?
Yeah.
Yeah. Once you sip on a Cosmo and think about it.
Well, you know me. I'm a gin guy, so I'd probably just be having a wet martini.
That's very true. I make a mean martini, if I may say so.
Oh, the wetter the better.
Speaking of wet martinis, we actually both guest featured on a episode of Queer's Questions and Cocktails.
We did. Yes, we did.
And I think we may have been the first guest that was informational, provided cocktail recipes and so many anecdotes that the raw footage went to over 2.5 hours. So I don't envy them their editing challenge. So as soon as that episode of Queer's Questions and Cocktails gets released, of course, our friend Bradley is the one behind that particular podcast.
And he's been a guest on this show 4 times now, I think?
A few times, yeah. Anyway, so he will, as soon as he's published it, we will let you all know. It is very, very uncouth.
Mm-hmm.
It is sort of an unfiltered, marginally maybe intoxicating episode.
It is not primetime friendly.
It is not, but it is very entertaining. So, yeah, Queer's Questions and Cocktails.
In the sense that censorship leaks.
QC pod. I'm going to move on now into a not-so-great story. And this one's actually based out of Toronto.
Right.
Of course, you know, recently they were flooded by all the rain. And Toronto's in the news for a lot of things. We talked a couple of weeks ago about how Doug Ford, the Premier, Conservative Premier of Ontario, is looking to slash the size of council and how that might impact their diversity of council. We've talked before about how when conservative leadership takes hold, we seem to see a spike in hate crimes.
Yeah, usually lasts about 6 months, typically.
Well, the Southern Poverty Law Center has been tracking a massive increased trend since Trump was elected. And we're also seeing it all over the place that as sort of conservative rhetoric rises to the fore, we also see a corresponding increase. We've seen for the first time in a long time protesters at Pride. And that moves me quite swiftly to the sort of the next story here about the LGBT rainbow crosswalk at our church in Wellesley in the village in Toronto. This is the same village that's still, you know, hoping there aren't more dead bodies from Bruce MacArthur. You know, this is the very heart of the gay community in Toronto. They had a swastika recently graffitied onto the rainbow crosswalk with an SF written over it. I don't know if the guy signed it, but there's also a theory that he had put SF to indicate that I think it's the Stormfront, which is a popular white supremacist website.
Now, the problem is that the Church in Wellesley area in Toronto, so that's the villages in the Church in Wellesley area, if you've never been there, it's always been in the center of a rough area. So before the recent explosion in condos and unaffordable rent and all that sort of thing, Church in Wellesley used to be, actually it was a part of, it was continuous with a low-income part of Toronto. So to get to the gay village, most people came from the Bloor side because the other directions to come at, you would be going through some pretty rough neighborhoods to get there. Now, historically, most queer neighborhoods are in rough parts of town because that's where the queers can afford to live. It's where they can afford to set up business, and that sort of thing. So
that relates to the fact that LGBT people earn on average less and so on.
Definitely historically. There's been some changes in that recently. I don't want to say anything conclusive.
It's not
but
at the same level it was. It's still not on par.
Historically, it was way more dramatic than now. Like, poverty was a symptom of queerness up until maybe the late 90s at the earliest.
To a degree, it still is.
Yeah,
still is.
So that neighborhood, like when I first started going to church in Wellesley when I lived in Hamilton, it was just that kind of thing was a little bit more common. So this is a return of something we haven't seen in a while. Again, I'm not saying like this is bad, but I think people who lived in the neighborhood are probably, I trust in them. I think they've got it covered. You know, I think they can handle whatever's coming their way.
Well, you're spot on. Because the neighborhood association, street neighborhood association, as soon as they saw it, like, the paint hadn't even dried.
Yeah.
And they whipped out their multicolored buckets of paint.
And then just redid it?
They did, yeah. Some passing by City of Toronto workmen blocked traffic for them because they just happened to be in the area and just, hey guys, we'll block some traffic for you. And they repainted it.
Huh.
And then it was done. Yeah, it was not there for very long. The neighborhood association was on it, crickety split.
Yeah, that's good to hear.
But you're right; it is a community with great resilience.
Yeah,
it wasn't to the same scale of defacing as, you know, the Paris one, which we mentioned a few months ago.
I thought it was in Poland.
No, I think it was in Paris where they kept defacing the one road, and then the mayor of Paris was like, "Stuff it, tripling the Pride budget. Everything's going to be gay."
Oh, no, I was thinking
oh, you're thinking of the Polish one where it kept getting defaced, so they made an actual rainbow.
Yeah, they made an actual rainbow. They just projected a rainbow at a fountain so that it's just a rainbow piece of water that you can't paint on a piece of water.
Yeah, you can't graffiti water easily.
See, I remember these things.
I know.
I'm paying attention.
They're all related to crosswalks. Now, Ottawa's crosswalk got a new lick of paint. And of course, we mentioned before the new crosswalk in St. John, New Brunswick. Mm. So yeah, they're sort of symbolic. And I know that when I travel across Canada, it does mean something it's sort of a welcoming gesture when you enter somewhere that has a rainbow crosswalk. It's sort of a very visible cue that this is an area that's welcoming and accepting. Yeah. And
ideally, the city will do it. And if the community bands together and raises the funds to do it themselves, but the city doesn't care and lets them do it, either way, it means that you're in a good city. I mean, ideally, I would rather find out that the city did it themselves. But, you know, if the city's like, we don't care, go ahead. That's also good, you know?
Well, Toronto police are investigating. So if you're one of our listeners in the Toronto area and you know anything or you know somebody who knows something, please report it. And our relationship with the police isn't super stellar. And there's no guarantee this will get very far. But... the Dignity Initiative, Amnesty International, and a number of other organizations that work nationally on LGBT issues. Dignity Initiative, or the Dignity Network, is actually a network of LGBT serving organizations at the national level. They've been pressuring the Equal Rights Coalition Conference. Now, the Equal Rights Coalition was a 39-member organization of states. So it's currently being co-chaired by Chile and Canada.
Okay.
And they had their national conference in Vancouver just very recently. So it's sort of the big international body working specifically for equal rights outside of the UN sort of infrastructure.
Right, okay.
Although I think UNESCO is even promoting it, and I think they're there as sort of a guest speakers and so on and so forth.
Okay.
So it is an interstate thing, you know. The Minister Freeland, the foreign minister for Canada, was there in attendance, special advisor on LGBT issues to Prime Minister Trudeau, MP Randy Boissonneau was also there at the conference. Well, they've wrapped it up. Cyprus joined. That's quite exciting.
Oh.
They're now the 40th member to sign on to the principles of the Equal Rights Coalition.
I bet Uruguay's in there. Everybody forgets about Uruguay.
And I'm pretty sure the Netherlands are in there as well.
Yeah.
I mean, the usual suspects of LGBT rights. And it was interesting because when the whole Saudi Arabia thing's been kicking off, Minister Freeland was literally at a press conference announcing how important it is to support the fundamental rights, especially of LGBT folks, mm-hmm. are being persecuted. And as we know, it's not super awesome to be LGBT in Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's some distinct mm-hmms going on there.
Yeah, yeah. And last year, we ended up having to limit ourselves on reporting on Chechnya because it was like 6 weeks in a row of bad news.
Yeah, there's only so much bad news we can take, you know, and that's just, it is what it is. But this is a good news story.
Okay, yeah.
Because the federal government, as announced by MP Randy Boissonneau, the special advisor on LGBT issues, has announced an additional $1 million will be directed towards supporting LGBT international initiatives.
Good.
They're looking at human rights work internationally, specifically on LGBT stuff. They're looking at changing the guidelines for the human rights defenders. So the sort of asylum process for people who are whistleblowers or human rights activists in other countries.
Right.
Who are often targeted.
Yeah.
So kind of addressing how can we fold in LGBT activists into that discussion.
And journalists as well often are targeted. Like there's a lot of issues. Like you and I have talked about things where there's a few things where it's like, you know, Putin's not great. I don't think he's the devil, but he's definitely not great. I put him at like a 6 out of 10 on the bad guy scale, except for journalists. There, he's a 10. Everything. So, I mean, yeah, no, journalism is definitely a thing. There's a problem with journalists in most of the conflict areas in the Middle East. South America, you can't report on Venezuela anymore. It's getting to be a problem. So, I mean, hopefully they're extending this protection to journalists as well, because we need to know. We need people on the ground who are not government officials putting their eyes on things and saying, yeah, it's how they say, or no, it's not how they say. I don't know. Mind you, I feel biased to be pro-journalistic freedom.
I think that's not just the main...
Being what we're doing right now.
That's not just the main issue with Russia here. I'm just going to digress briefly to Russia, because there was a couple of big news stories this past week. Russia has charged its first teen for the promoting LGBT propaganda to children law.
Okay.
Now, apparently he had on his phone or shared with somebody else on his phone partly nude images of men. So they could be topless. It's, the details are unknown. He wasn't allowed to speak to his lawyer for an extended period of time. It was kind of kept in isolation before they were able to figure out what was going on there. And it's believed that he was targeted because he was very vocal in a gay rights protest within the town that he's in. It's a very small town in Russia.
Right.
Not only is that, but days prior to that, the Russians arrested dozens of people in St. Petersburg during the annual attempt at a pride parade.
At a pride parade, yeah.
So, yeah, this is... Russia's no shining light on LGBT rights.
Oh, no, for sure, no.
But what's really good here is that Canada is taking a stand. It'll be interesting to see how firm Canada's stand is, because the Saudi Arabia case, which is actually about women's rights, is really testing, you know, are we all talk or all back or no bite? Are we all like, oh, LGBT rights are super important across the world.
Yeah.
Let's throw some money at it. Or when the excrement hits the air conditioning, is Canada really standing up for these rights? I think Saudi Arabia is going to be a very big test for that. But I want to go, I want to jump now to a quote by Chrystia Freeland, the Minister of Foreign Affairs, who says, we know that there is more work to be done in supporting and advancing LGBTQ2 and intersex human rights. We will continue to work to defend and promote the rights of sexual minorities all over the world. Mm-hmm. What I really like is actually as part of their $1 million announcement, they've announced that the Peace and Stabilization Operations Program, which is one of the international development and global aid programs at Global Affairs Canada, will be looking at funding projects of up to $1 million that address LGBTQ2 and intersex people in violent conflicts.
Okay.
So we've talked before about the refugee camp, inside the refugee camp, I think it's in Kenya, and about how LGBT folks caught up in conflict are usually amongst the most vulnerable.
Yeah.
Sort of any resemblance of social norms go out the window, and they're very, very vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
This program by Canada will kind of really zero in on LGBT folks in conflict zones.
Okay.
It'll be great to kind of work with LGBT folks sort of on the front lines who have literally nothing.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So this is pretty cool news from Canada that they're really coughing up some cash to work internationally with folks who are really, really most vulnerable.
I really hope they don't neglect the situations that are bad but not dire. So, like, I hope, like, Haiti and Jamaica still get remembered in Indonesia. And...
Well, this isn't, this doesn't exclude the fact that Canada has a feminist international development framework.
Right.
And actually, as part of their announcement, they announced that they'll be looking at how to fully incorporate LGBTQ to and intersex people into that framework. And that sort of impacts how they do all of their funding programs and so on.
Okay.
So this is a specific boost to a very specific program, but sort of big picture, they're looking at how they can do a better job universally across the board. So it's pretty exciting stuff for Global Affairs Canada.
I mean, I do understand that they have to prioritize, but you know, there's just, you hear stories or you remember stories from a while back and you just think, I hope somebody's still on that.
This, I wanted to go to a story that for me, we would be remiss not to mention because I adore Eurovision.
Yes. Yes.
It is my lifeblood.
Well, I mean, Eurovision is it's just a Canqueer standard, really. We still talk about the glory days of 2016. They're one of my favorite YouTube shows. Their theme song for the longest time was like, why do I recognize this voice? And it turns out it was Yuri Putman singing, who was the 2016 contestant for Lithuania. It was Lithuania. But yeah, the fact that I could remember that Yuri Putman was 2016 Lithuania, it's, that's some dedication to Eurovision.
Well, Turkey is out.
What?
Again.
Oh.
Still.
Okay.
So since 1975, they had been participating. I think it was Finland, the musician, kissed a backup dancer in 2013 as part of a song protest around equal marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And Turkey was so outraged that they they banned the screening of the final, I believe it was.
2013 was Italy, wasn't it?
I can't remember where, but 2014 was when Conchita Wurst won.
Right, okay.
And they were like, oh my gosh, look how degraded the morals are. We can't possibly broadcast this. And they kind of consistently said that until Eurovision, which is essentially the gay Olympics of karaoke,
kind of, yeah,
bans LGBT participants, they won't be broadcasting Eurovision. That's the line they're drawing, which for me is like, I don't even know if I want you to have Eurovision.
It's really weird, though. Like, Turkey is just classic for that. I don't know. The people are very progressive, but the government is not. It's kind of like Iran. Whenever you hear about people from Iran, the people are very progressive, but the government is not, somehow. I don't know. Like, whenever I hear about Turkey doing weird behavior like this, I don't know. It's not consistent.
Well, under Erdogan in Turkey, LGBT rights have... not been doing grand. No, they're not doing well. Maybe this new program from Global Affairs Canada can get involved. But we're moving now to a sort of Eurovision friendly song, which is the new track by Robin, which is Missing You.
Has Robin ever done Eurovision?
This was released very recently and will be back. Actually, we won't be back. Coming up next is an interview with a Ontario based activist advocating for a reversal of Premier Doug Ford's recent decision around the sex ed curriculum.
Okay.
So Faye Johnston will be joining me in just a few moments after this song, and me and you will be back at the end of the show.
Excellent.
All of the plans we made.
Hello and welcome back to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. I am very excited to actually have Faye Johnston actually joining me right now. And we're going to be talking about the sex ed curriculum in Ontario. Now, you have been sort of relatively front and center, a very vocal advocate against the rollback, I think I'm going to say, to the 1988 curriculum. 1998, not as bad as I thought, apparently.
Still 20 years.
So why is this rollback by the Doug Ford provincial government such an issue? Like, why is it? Why should the rest of Canada maybe be concerned?
Mm-hmm. So basically what's happening is, again, the government is rolling back the 2015 update to our health and physical education curriculum, which is basically what we would call our sex ed. And that's setting it back to 1998. And in 1998, things like gay marriage weren't legalized in Canada. We didn't have trans rights legislation. We didn't have the kinds of conversations around consent and online safety as we need to have today. Because, you know, back in 1998, there wasn't really so much of an internet that people were actively using and spending so much of their time on. And so the reason this is an issue is because this is our government putting the health and well-being of young people at risk. Because, you know, if young people don't have the information and knowledge they need to make healthy choices, they won't be equipped to make those choices in a way that is looking out for their health.
Now, we on our show, we talk a lot about, you know, communication mm-hmm. is so vitally important, especially within LGBT relationships and kind of to reconcile various differences. Now, what I wanted to mention is, within the last year or so, the Me Too movement mm-hmm. and Time's Up movement mm-hmm. have really sort of changed the national dynamic and the national conversation around consent. Mm-hmm. It's become far more nuanced. What's acceptable socially now is a far cry from a year ago, mm-hmm. let alone 1998. So does that mean that our children in the province of Ontario are going to be taught this sort of much more antiquated concept of consent?
It makes that a reality, yeah. Again, some teachers will, and many school boards and teachers have said that they're not going to follow the dictates of this government and that they're going to teach the comprehensive sexuality education that kids need. But at the end of the day, the curriculum will be a curriculum developed in 1998. I don't believe the word consent comes up once in the curriculum documents. And just to give a demonstration of the difference between these documents, the curriculum from 1998 is something like 42 pages long, whereas the curriculum from 2015 is something like in the hundreds. And that's huge because that means that there's so much more information that is needed now and that we know is needed, that the evidence says is needed for young people to be able to make healthy and informed decisions about their lives.
Absolutely. Now, we know that the Ministry of Education, when this really, you know, when the excrement hit the air conditioning, that they kind of came out and said, well, actually, you know, we're not going to remove those important bits. Now, you know, as you mentioned, Bill C-16 came out about a year or so ago, which would add a gender identity, gender expression to the Human Rights Act of Canada. And of course, within 1998 to now, we also, in the province of Ontario, had gender identity, gender expression added to the Human Rights Act of mm-hmm. Ontario. So these things, there's now legal protections for trans folks, and sort of the framework within trans folks working within the province of Ontario is very different. So my understanding is that the education minister said, well, wait. We're not going to roll back those bits. Mm-hmm. There's still room for nuanced consent conversations. There's still room for trans conversations. But are they actually changing what they're rolling out? Is it just all talk and bluster?
It's all talk. It's bluster. The reality is that they are not keeping any aspects of the 2015 curriculum. The minister announced a couple days ago that she's sending out the 1998 curriculum to teachers and school boards across Canada or across Ontario. The minister might have said that those were things that could be discussed, but she's providing no resources, supports, and no structure with which teachers are supposed to touch on these topics. And it's ridiculous that we would allow this to be left up to individual teachers because, you know, consent is evidence-based practice. Mm-hmm. You know, like, consent keeps us safe. It helps folks feel respect in their identities and their ability, like, autonomy over their bodies. That's a fundamental right in this world. And she's not mandating that teachers talk about that. And so, you know, the reality is that a lot of teachers won't. And that puts young people at risk. That will increase the realities of sexual violence and rape culture in this country, in this province.
So you mentioned earlier about how some of the scoreboards are sort of, maybe they're going to teach the other stuff anyway. Mm-hmm. So what's happening there? Is there an educationist revolt happening?
Something's happening that I don't think, in my very few years on this earth, I've never seen this happen. I have never seen a revolt across the entire province from school boards, like institutions of education, saying that they are not okay with what our Ministry of Education is doing, saying that they will refuse to follow the edicts of the minister. That's huge. And they wouldn't do that for no reason, right? Like, they're doing this, and 26 of them are doing this. That is a huge portion of our school boards. That's more than a third of school boards. I think I've seen as much, that representing as much as 50% of, like, the students in Ontario. They wouldn't do this offhand, right? There's a ton of issues in schools that need to be addressed. But they're doing this particularly because they know that the Ministry of Education, that the government, is putting the health and well-being of young people at risk by reinstating an outdated curriculum that doesn't reflect the realities of young people in schools or the information they need.
Now, is the Ministry of Education going to crack down on these 26 school boards, or are they going to just sort of let it slide? You know, do we know what the approach is from the ministry yet?
I have no idea. I know that a couple school boards have looked into legal options to basically make the case that it is a violation of rights, I believe, is the case that they're trying to make it for the Minister of Education to force them to go back to an outdated curriculum that doesn't talk about LGBTQ identities. But I think that if the minister tries to push back, it will blow up in her face. The Conservatives weren't expecting to get into a fight like this. Mm-hmm. I firmly believe that they thought that this would just be a way of paying back their political, the political points they owe to social conservative demographics that got them elected. But I don't think they expected this kind of fight. And I don't think they have any strategy whatsoever on how to address it. They're ducking cover, like they're hiding. The Minister of Education has barely made a public appearance or discussed with media in the last weeks or so. That's ridiculous. And so I don't know what they'll do, but I know that everything they've done so far has just put them in hotter water, and I expect that to continue. It's a trend with this government.
Well, I think there'll be a real showdown, as it were, come sort of September, which we're creeping very quickly towards. You know, there must be a great sense of anxiety amongst teachers, you know. So it sounds to me like there's the 1998 curriculum, which they're told they ought to follow. A lot of these school boards are going, no. Mm-hmm. What about the teachers themselves? Are they making this up on the spot? Are they pulling memes off Yahoo? Like, how are teachers filling this gap?
So now, again, like, the Ministry of Education was silent for the longest time to school boards and teachers. They have sent out, or are saying they're sending out, the curriculum documents, which they're expecting teachers then to follow. But teachers who don't want to, and who want to teach, you know, comprehensive evidence-based sexuality education, as, you know, is the best practice on an international level, they are going to probably have to depend on the 2015 curriculum. So they still have those documents. They were all trained in how to deliver it. But beyond that, they're probably going to see a stronger reliance on community-based organizations and organizations with expertise in this. So, for example, Action Canada for Sexual Health and Rights has beyond the basics sex ed curriculum that they developed. I hope teachers find resources like those or reach out to their local Planned Parenthoods. And I know that outside of schools, organizations, community groups are rallying to find mechanisms to keep, like, to continue to pressure schools to teach the updated sex ed, but also to find alternative ways to make sure that education is getting into schools and communities and reaching the young people that need it.
So how does this compare to the rest of the country? You know, is the sort of 1998 curriculum in line with the rest of the country, or is the 2015 curriculum more in line with the rest of the country?
I would say that the 2015 curriculum, at the very least, is more in line with international best practice. I have compared it to the United Nations Technical Guide on Comprehensive Sexuality Education, which is an evidence-based document that was pulled together with huge amounts of inputs from international experts. And I didn't find any huge areas where the 2015 curriculum didn't meet those best practices. I found that they aligned massively, and I would not be surprised if these documents were consulted in developing the curriculum. But in terms of how it compares to other provinces, it really varies province to province. Some provinces have great up-to-date sex education curriculums. Other provinces, like I believe PEI, are still quite outdated. and probably just as outdated as the 1998 curriculum. But if Ontario wants to talk about itself as like a leader in this country, as a province where, you know, people are getting access to the information they need, are healthy, are well, are making informed choices, it shouldn't be about what other provinces are doing. It should be about setting a gold standard in our province to make sure that our young people are as healthy as they can be.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a bit of a shock. I mean, there's been talk before about how there's no federal level education plan. Mm-hmm. I think that that's always something that's been missing, a sort of a standard that's universal from coast to coast to coast. And I think that sort of has laid open these scenarios where there's this disparity between between the two of them. I mean, do you think the kids are concerned? Like, what's the sort of the feeling on the ground right now? Are young folks worried?
I think parents definitely are, for one. I think if you look on social media, you see tons of parents speaking out on this issue. You see tons of folks like myself who only recently, like I was a high school student in like 5 years ago, 6 years ago. Like I went through the 1998 sex ed curriculum. Like folks like me who have seen how this the 1998 curriculum fails students. But yeah, young people in school, students are concerned. I've seen them speaking out and sharing articles, calling out what this is for what it is. I have seen, you know, young people getting worried about what they're going to teach in school or what they're going to learn in schools. But I think more than anything else, I hear parents. Parents are concerned that their kids are not going to get the information they need. And I worry for, you know, like young trans kids who are, you know, going to go back to a curriculum where, you know, kids aren't taught about their existence, aren't taught that they are valid, that they deserve to be respected. That's terrifying for me. And so I'm scared for those kids, and I'm worried for the parents of those kids who are going to have to be there to support that kid when their school might not be as accepting as it could be.
Now, a part of that conversation is that, you know, there's certainly, you know, one side of the debate that parents are the ones who should be having these conversations. Mm-hmm. It's parents that should be stepping up and providing that leadership role. And there's that element of the conversation. There's also the critique that I'd heard that the 2015 curriculum apparently wasn't sufficient in its consultation. Mm-hmm. So there's the argument that they're going to do a new update that's more consultative, that mm-hmm. they're talking to more experts and more parents and so on. Do you have any faith in that process?
I don't have faith in that process because the Conservatives have never been clear on the reasons for which they're revoking the 2015 update. And the reason they're not being clear is because it's homophobia and transphobia. And so I don't trust a government that is willing to put the interest of a small group of social conservatives above the, you know, right to wellness for young kids who are queer and trans. But beyond that, it's blatant lies to be saying that the curriculum in 2015 wasn't consulted with or wasn't consulted on. 4,000 parents were consulted, 2,400 educators, something like 700 students, and 140 nonprofit and social service organizations, including extremely reputable and science, like evidence-based organizations like the Center for Addiction and Mental Health. This curriculum was evidence-based. And so I genuinely don't have faith in the Conservatives because I think that they're only doing this to try to appease those social conservative groups that got them elected.
Well, we've got 4 years of Doug Ford ahead of us, and that's 4 years. I mean, that's a long time. That's an entire high school run under this provincial government. You know, what do you think is going to happen in the next step? What's next? How do folks respond to this?
I think we keep up the pressure. Again, the Conservatives through this entire issue seem to have been waiting for this to blow over, and being shocked at how much it hasn't and how much of an uproar this has caused. And so I think we have to keep that up. We have to pressure individual MPPs more than anything else. Because I actually don't believe that most progressive conservative MPs buy into this. It's clearly rooted in homophobia, transphobia, and I would be very heartbroken if I realized that the majority of our province's elected officials are homophobic and transphobic at heart. And so I think we have to pressure them, and we have to make it an election issue, even if an election is 4 years down the road. So keep organizing around this, demonstrate to them that this matters enough to us, that it will change our votes. And that this matters enough to us that we will do everything we can to fight it, as we have been doing.
Now, we broadcast out in some sort of more rural, some more conservative areas. You know, there are folks who maybe had supported this initiative and supported this was a decision that Doug Ford was elected to do. Mm-hmm. I think that he campaigned on this during his election run. So would it then be undemocratic to not follow this guidance?
I don't believe so. I believe that you know, he appeased a small set of social conservatives in his party with that promise. The overwhelming majority of parents in Ontario support quality evidence-based sex ed in schools. And so, you know what, at the end of the day, I care more about you putting the health and well-being of young people than I care about you making do on a promise that you made to a small group of radical homophobic and transphobic social conservatives.
Well, where can folks learn more about this? What's a good research?
There's social media hashtags that everyone's using. It's hashtag sex ed saves lives. That is a great one to loop into to see a bit of the discussion. Check out organizations like Action Canada for Sexual Health and Rights and Planned Parenthood Toronto, who are doing a lot of work on this issue. And there's currently a campaign out of the 519, Toronto's LGBTQ Community Center, that is, I think it's called We've Got Your Back, mm-hmm. That is organizing on this issue and trying to demonstrate to the government just how much we are opposed to it.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining me, and we'll be back with the rest of the show just after this. Hello, and welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
I'm Sebastian.
And that was you just heard our interview there with Faye Johnston. Certainly a bit of a quick talker. We hope that the real core messaging certainly got through that. We have run out of time, though.
Have we?
We have, and we're playing out with Jake Shear's The Mustache theme song,
mm-hmm.
Which I kind of like it, and I like the music video that goes with it. I mean, you can't see the music video as this is a podcast or radio show.
Yes.
But the Google exists, and yes. I would strongly recommend that you go check it out. This is Big Bushy Mustache by Jake Shears. It's all we've got time for. I've been Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian. And thanks for listening. Car.